You know, I look at this and think that it is because people don't want to talk about it that the solutions haven't shown up. It is because we don't talk about it that we don't bring the crisis nurseries, the quality daycare, the mental health services for them. Issues that these kids don't have a voice in the homes they're raised in. They don't have a voice in the media or at the state legislature or in the courts that rule their lives. And really, the cost to society is tremendous. I just hope that we can bring more people into this conversation and become understanding that this conversation has to be had, or things are going to get worse, not better.
Are you having trouble losing weight? It could be due to insulin levels that are out of balance. Learn what fat-flushing food helps balance your insulin levels. It's basically a hormone that determines how much fat your body stores. Over 240,000 women have successfully melted unwanted fat off their body fast, faster than you would think possible, keeping it off for good. Learn how so many people have melted fat so quickly. Click the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This episode, I bring back Mike Tikkanen to talk about the child welfare system. This is a hard topic for anybody to listen to, but I got to tell you, it is so important that people don't turn this off and that they learn about what's really going on in our environment with children, that you share this, that you talk to your friends about that. About this, and that people get educated on what's really going on in our country when it comes to children. This episode, we're going to talk about why we're in the situation we're in, what's going on in our with the drugs that they're giving to 1 and 2 year olds, and why they're giving them these drugs, with the percentages of children that are being referred to the child welfare system, and how it's a feeding ground for prisons. And also the sexual abuse and trauma that these poor children deal with, and what it's doing, what the cost is to society. I've come to the conclusion that this is a completely nonpartisan issue. If you get rid of the politics, you get rid of what party you're from, and you just bring together good people who mean well, who want to do good for the country and are patriotic, and you get rid of the party ideas and everything and just do what's good for that particular issue, I believe, especially on this issue, good people would be able to come together and come up with a plan that works, that can really help children and help society. I think it's our national politics, this division and BS that we're all dealing with, that is keeping us from doing what's right for kids. Because everyone, it's a nonpartisan issue. Whether you care about money, whether you're fiscally conservative, it costs way more money to deal with people who, if we don't take care of the trauma when they're little, when you take care of trauma when they're little, it's really inexpensive compared to a lifetime of issues. It's also a problem when it comes to getting people for jobs and corruption in society and the schools being messed up. It's a problem that infiltrates every part of our communities. And if you are a Democrat and you like welfare systems and like wealth, unless you're evil and you like bigger government programs just because you want the money coming in, that's the only reason why a Democrat would be for this. Because doing a smaller program by getting smaller prisons and smaller programs when they're older and bigger programs when they're younger, dealing with the trauma and the abuse when they're younger, would change this situation. And you'll hear a lot of stats and a lot of information from Mike today. He's been involved in dealing with the welfare of children for decades. He's an expert in this area. He's very passionate. And so I really hope you stay and listen to this. I know that advertisers won't advertise next to child abuse issues. I know that people turn it off and they don't want to listen to it. And that's why over the last few decades, our media has not just that. I mean, I think there's a lot of people involved with it who are powerful positions. But the advertisement agencies don't want to advertise next to anything that deals with child abuse because they think it drops their numbers. So we've gotten a situation where not only do we have powerful people not wanting to talk about it because it helps them be able to continue trafficking kids or whatever nefarious activities they're doing, we have a situation where good people who don't mean to be bad are actually promoting it because they don't want to advertise next to it and they don't want to watch it or listen to it. It's better if they just don't, because it's hard to listen to. Now, if you already are very well versed on this, I can understand, makes sense not to watch it. But if you're not, learn about what's really going on in our child welfare system. Share it with your friends. Help educate our communities. So now let's get into my interview with Mike Tikkanen. Hi, Mike. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
You have been in the forefront of the child welfare system for decades now. You've talked at the United Nations. You've written a book called Invisible Children, and it's something that you're very passionate about. Can you tell us why this is such an important issue for you?
It really is because of my work as a CASA volunteer guardian ad litem, and what I have seen in the 50 children that I've removed from toxic homes. The pain is, it never ends for these children. The good news is there are programs that work, but the bad news is that as a rule, even advanced communities that are trying to handle it haven't gotten into the programs that will work to help these children fast enough or hard enough. And it's so painful to not have happy stories with all the work that so many people are doing to try to fix these kids and make life safe for them and help them to lead a normal life. Our communities just haven't stepped up. They just don't understand it yet. And so it takes people that are passionate about it, willing to talk about it. You know, I look at this and think that it is because people don't want to talk about it that the solutions haven't shown up. It is because we don't talk about it that we don't bring the crisis nurseries, the quality daycare, the mental health services for them. So now 37% of American children are reported to child protection by their 18th birthday. It's awful. It really is a painful thing to realize that the jails are full because of this. The schools are impacted so severely because of the traumatized children that don't learn well. And things like this I've been watching it for 20 some years now. I quit taking cases and have tried to become an advocate, a voice, and a nonprofit now that works to show up at events and travel the country, bringing to light the issues that these kids don't have a voice in the homes they're raised in. They don't have a voice in the media or at the state legislature or in the courts that rule their lives. And really, the cost to society is tremendous. We don't recognize it, but it impacts every single part of our lives, from insurance costs to supporting the juvenile and the criminal justice system. And the cost is added to schools to try to work with these children. It's not healthy for anyone. Turnover is high in their fields of social work and education and policing, and it's painful. I just hope that we can bring more people into this conversation and become understanding that this conversation has to be had, or things are going to get worse, not better.
Alzheimer's and dementia are the most misunderstood, cruelest, and costly of all diseases. Dementia starts 30 to 50 years before symptoms appear. Every 3 seconds, someone gets diagnosed. 10% at age 65, 25% at age 75, and 50% at age 85 will be diagnosed. But symptoms are reversible despite what conventional medicine will tell you. Research has conclusively shown that what you do or don't do in your middle years can greatly impact your risk of Alzheimer's. Make simple changes discussed in the free 26-page report available below. You will also be signed up for the free summit when you download this free report. You will learn the best foods, herbs, and supplements for brain health,
And by following these, it will dramatically reduce the chance you'll end up with this devastating issue. Take action now before memory loss is irreversible.
Well, I've had marketing people tell me that they purposely will not advertise next to anything that has to do with childhood abuse because it statistically lowers their sales. And so over the last 2 or 3 decades, the advertising agencies have requested that their ads don't run next to these stories. And so consequently, newspapers and media won't cover it. And it's this downward spiral of crap. And the only way that a show will cover it is knowing that they're going to lose money for that show. And it's a really bad downward spiral in our system, and it allows the worst of the worst to flourish.
I will take that statement and talk a little bit about how the rest of the world, the industrialized world, the 20 nations that we have compared ourselves to since the end of World War II, the difference between how the rest of the world, those nations, address child abuse, child protection, young families, at-risk families, at-risk children. After the end of the Second World War, they recognized that rebuilding their society demanded that they take care of other people's children. We used a punishment model and have built more and more prisons and jails and harsher sentencing. And we've ignored the core issue, which is childhood trauma and the mental health issues that are endemic to children that have lived through generation after generation of child abuse. It's actually become a biological reality that these children have amygdalas or amygdala, the part of the brain that is reptilian in nature, and less executive function, more reptilian behaviors have filled more and more jails and prisons, and again, made schools perform much worse. Graduations are even with GEDs, we use that as an equivalency, and it's really not.
Well, and when you're saying reptilian, it's just survival instincts and very back to core animal instincts.
Exactly, and the damage they do. And you must understand, from my perspective as a CASA guardian ad litem, I love these kids. I've watched them do terrible things. I had one boy that's cost the community about $3 million by the time he aged out of foster care, not including the people he stabbed, the teacher he beat up, the terrible things he's done to the 29 foster homes he's lived in. He's a lovely boy.
But wasn't he traumatized? Because I've heard your story. His story is really gruesome.
It is, and it starts with his father, who was in an adjacent state's prison, requesting custody. And while that's in and of itself not a terrible thing, that man was in prison for abusing small boys. There was a court order at the time forbidding him to be around small boys. My child, I consider these kids my kids. He was tied to a bed, sexually abused, beaten, and starved for 4 years. My first meeting with him, he was 7 years old, and he was covered in bruises, front and back of his body, completely covered in bruises. And he had feral behaviors, and he was immediately put on Prozac-like drugs. And that was a new guardian ad litem, so I didn't know what I know now. And basically, he was shifted from foster home to foster home to foster home for 11 years. And he has AIDS, and I actually have lost track of him now. He was with me for about 14 years. But I know he cost the county $3 million, and I know he did untold damage to untold people. I know a lot of that damage, and it's awful. It's awful. It's awful for everybody.
Did he get any trauma care?
No, not at the time. Actually, when you go back to when I became a guardian in 96, we were just talking about these things, and I came to know the trauma movement long before most other people did. And really, it's only now coming into the forefront. It's only now getting the publicity it deserves. And it's still argued. The mental health profession hasn't completely taken it in, and there are those that fight it. But I say to them that labeling things has nothing to do with solving the problem. The concept of the DSM, that 1,000-page book, is almost useless as far as I'm concerned with the children that we're talking about. The kids that I work with need trauma-informed care. They need trauma-informed teaching. They need trauma-informed policing. They need trauma-informed foster and adoptive homes. If you punish my kids, it's not the same as if you punish a coping skill equipped child. My kids put one more brick in the wall, you're one more hateful bastard in their life, and they won't have it. And so teachers that don't understand what they've been through, the World Health Organization, for instance, defines torture as extended exposure to violence and deprivation. My kids have all had torture in their lives. The oldest child in the families that I work with has either been sexually abused, beaten, starved, abused in whatever manner it was for 4 years. That's a long time. And the traumas we're talking about don't take 4 years to be torture. I had one gentleman buy me lunch. He was a 65-year-old, well-educated and successful man. And at that lunch, he told me he'd been abused once as a child. And he hadn't talked about it to anybody, really, for all those years until he was on his fourth marriage, I believe, in his third business partnership. And he was obviously traumatized, and it impacted all of his life. And he's still seeing up until he died, he was still seeing that therapist. And that was, I suppose, 15 years ago now that I met him. Well, I shouldn't say met him, that he had the lunch with me and we talked about that. So trauma of the kind that we're talking about, people get mixed up a little bit. And that's what's uncomfortable about this, is they don't like to talk about it. But until we do talk about it, it's not going to be resolved. There will not be enough quality daycare centers. The mental health resources will not be there. For instance, we put 20,000 1- and 2-year-old children on Prozac-like drugs in 2001. Think about that.
What does that do? I mean, are they putting all those kids on those drugs and then not giving them trauma or the love and the care that they need, and the drugs just take care of them?
Thank you. That's the exact right question. The reason we use those drugs is primarily to keep them from hurting themselves and keep them from hurting other people. Unless you understand what Prozac does, Prozac-like drugs, psychotropic medications do to the mind, and why that label always states may cause suicidal ideation. You know, we the people in general that haven't used those drugs don't know what's going on. It's basically a mental health straitjacket. And in my case, and I can speak to both the suicidal ideation and what happens with the drugs. I mean, Topamax was given to me as an off-label use for migraine headaches. It made me stupid. I hated it from the first pill I took. And when I had the suicidal ideation, I was having lunch with a banker downtown Minneapolis, fully formed thoughts of killing myself. And I study mental health, and I'm a mature fellow. I didn't sleep for 2 nights. And I only then knew what my kids were living with.
Is that why we're seeing 6-5-year-olds killing themselves?
It is. I'm sure that has something to do with it. The boy that hung himself in Florida, Gabriel Meyer, was 7 years old. He left a note that could have been written by me, by a 40-50-year-old person, basically saying, I hate Prozac. You make me take it. I'm going to hang myself. He was one of many, many, many foster children that I've known that have been forced onto these drugs. About 33% of the kids in the U.S. are forced onto these drugs in foster homes. And if you do watch the video of the woman that made the movie about children in homes, group
foster
homes.
Foster Shock?
Yeah, in Florida, privatized. You know, 50, 60% of the kids in some states are put on them. It makes them manageable. And that's an awful reason to do that to a child. In Texas, the juvenile boys, I think about 80% of the juvenile boys in Texas are on those drugs. And across the country, when you get into the criminal justice or the juvenile justice system, you'll realize that about two-thirds of the kids in juvenile justice are on those drugs. And about half of those kids have multiple serious mental health diagnoses, and we're not helping them. And it, by the way, it becomes too late at a point. When you're working with children, they want to be normal. They will go out of their way to try to do things. I've seen kids that get into good homes and get the treatments they need, you know, heal. And when that happens, then they go on to have normal families. But as a practical matter, that's not our approach. We don't have enough foster homes. We don't have enough quality group homes. The idea of privatizing things and making it a money-making opportunity is in general wrong. We need to have all the oversight we can have, all the training we can have. And there are very few states that step up and can do it right.
Well, I've talked to psychologists who are very successful dealing with trauma children. And one in particular, I've had long conversation with. She's just excellent. I'm trying to get her on the show. But she says that if you catch these children when they're little, that you can really turn all this stuff around. The older they are, the harder it is. And it is doable when they're little. It's doable when you're older, too. It's just harder. It takes more time.
It's a lot harder, a lot more expensive. The most successful program that we have in Minnesota, to my knowledge, is the Washburn. It used to be called the Washburn Center for Children's Mental Health. Now it's just called the Washburn Center. But it deals with the whole family. And really what we have here is generational abuse. And parents without parenting skills are a large part of the problem, because if your parents didn't have parenting skills, they don't come from the stork. You're not going to just get them. So the community, the Washburn Center, if we're dealing with these things as a family, I will say I'm hopeful and optimistic to say that most families can be interrupted and saved. But those that can't, we can still save the children. And so the idea is to save that child and the next generation, because really what happens is, and I'm going to give a statistic here that I think is important. When I got into child protection, I gave a talk at a women prison wardens conference in Minnesota. And I noticed that the number of children in child protection per family was rather large. And the woman that spoke before me at that conference of women prison wardens was a PhD lady from Cook County Prisons in Illinois. And she made the statement that the number of children had grown from 2 to 4 of the average number of children of the women in Cook County prisons. And her prediction was that it was going to become 6, 7, or 8 children per family. And the women that we're talking about are abused girls that are generally preteen mothers without parenting skills, a drunken, violent boyfriend, and they have a drug problem or alcohol problem themselves. And the way the county works, the states work, child protection works, you know, we are a civil rights nation, and we are quite willing to not help them get better and to put them in jail at the same time. And I've been to Shakopee Valley Women's Prison. And it saddens me. The kingpin laws have incarcerated a lot of women for being in love with or afraid of some kingpin drug guy that got years off his sentence because they rat out people and their lover or wife is one of them. So families disintegrate, women don't get the help they need, and they put these prisons so far away that the children don't get to visit. There's so much sadness in the punishment model that this country has used. And I always go back to talking about the way the rest of the world did this means that they're largely successful. They don't have these problems. They certainly don't have our mental health problems.
Well, we have the largest prison population in the world. I mean, we are, bar none, 24% of the population and 25% of the prison population. I mean, and that's a well-known stat, and it's because of what we're doing here. I'm to the point where I think it's on purpose for a whole bunch of reasons, but I want to ask you about this daunting stat, which is that over 50% of the kids in child welfare are sexually abused. That means that our system is so corrupt, so bad, that these kids are safer outside the system than in the system. What is going on? I mean, how can we be in a situation that so many children are sexually abused in child welfare?
I have to push back on that. What's happened is the sexual abuse takes place in the home. And there will be people that will argue that number, but as a practical matter, it's a big, big number. Think about this. I've had families of children where there's a lot of sexual abuse. When you take the children out and you put them in a foster home or state ward, do you think they quit having sex? Can you unteach sexual behavior? No, no, no. This is more than just telling a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old or a 9-year-old to stop doing that. We've had to disband families, siblings, because when they were together, they had sex. And that's common. So I don't see the, conspiratorial part here. What I see is 3, 4, 5 generations of child abuse. It's actually epigenetics. Do you know that's an expression of a gene? And you put that into the right environment, which is always the next family of abused children having their own abused children. The sex abuse is going to be part of it.
So it's growing exponentially then.
It is. It's because of the size of the families and our failure rates. Actually, you touched on a core thing right now, which is there is no transparency. There is no accountability. And I'm never going to blame social workers. I'm not blaming teachers.
Well, I know, because you work with so many people who are so caring. They get paid almost nothing, and they put all their effort into it. And the last thing you want to do is tell them that they're corrupt and they're incompetent, because those aren't the people. But you have to admit, there are organizations, and I have talked to, like, Foster Shock. I've talked to her. I've talked to people who save trafficked children. Some of these child group homes are breeding grounds for trafficking and for people who want to take advantage of kids and make money on these homes, which was covered in Foster Shock. That is a percentage of what's going on, along with these people who are really trying to help, like you and others who are pulling your hair out because you're not getting the resources and the help you need. I remember you telling me a story, and I don't remember what state, but you had a program that was going and you met with these people and they were pulling the funding. You talked about it in a last interview, and it was working, and then they were going to pull all the funding.
That's a touching story, and it almost makes me cry. The woman that ran that ran a small adoption agency. And she began it on her own, out of her own small pocket. And it was putting together these youth, they were boys, in a camp for just 4 days. It was a long weekend. And their success rate after 3, 4, maybe even 5 years was like 90%. What it meant was that the fellow, there was a man attached to each boy in the camp. And then after camp ended, the promise was that you call me if you have trouble. And that was the adult wanted to do it. The kid had someone. That's a big part of the problem here, is these children in child protection do not have an adult in their life that stays in their life. I had children with 20, 30 foster homes. That's disruptive mentally.
Well, it puts them at risk for adult prison and for any other abusive situation.
It's terrible. It's a very big part of our problem here today. But the program she ran was wonderful, and it should have been replicated and franchised and gone and done. And there are people that do these sorts of things. I've talked to police chiefs that have done these sorts of things. But it cannot succeed without some kind of long-term funding. It's like funding your schools on a lottery system. You know, when you win, you win. When you don't, you lose.
So why did they pull the funding away from her when she had a program that was 90% successful? And it would save the state or our country long-term a lot of money, much more money than they had to invest in it.
Actually, it was private funding from people that she called every year and said, I'm doing this again. Can you give me $5,000? And somebody didn't have it 1 year, it went away.
Okay.
And that's the same story I get I've had police chiefs tell me, you know, I've done this sort of thing. I've tried to help these boys and girls. I mean, it's different. And people try.
Why do we have funding for prisons to the length that we have it and for the punishment, but we don't have funding for the care of what she was talking about, which would save us so much money on prisons and the corruption and all the crap that messes up our schools. And I mean, it's just the stats are overwhelming of how that affects your story of the boy that cost the state $3 million. And that's not even a full number. Why can't we see long term that it's a better investment to just help them to be healthy people when they're young?
Well, I think it does actually go back to the thing we talk about where people don't like the conversation because they don't like the conversation. Their state rep, their governor doesn't know much or anything about this until some five-year-old hangs herself, which happened here in Minnesota, six-year-old. And then, or the boy that had 15 reports of abuse and had his face chewed off and 4 years old, he died, 15 reports of abuse and they were all ignored. Until those things happen, there is no conversation. The media doesn't find it attractive, as you say, because the advertisers want to stay away from it.